Hello, coffee nerds, listeners, fans, whatever you want to call yourselves. Welcome to the I Brew My Own Coffee podcast, the podcast for people who care about coffee. I'm your host, Alex Carpenter, and this is the 12th episode now. In this week's episode, we chatted with Chase Reeves, one of the guys behind Fizzle.co. We chatted with him about his passion for coffee, how that started, and where it's come to today. I spent probably half this episode laughing because Chase is hilarious, and he's, I would say, even a comedian, to say the least, and I just had a lot of fun chatting with him. And I hope you enjoy the episode, and thanks for listening. Mr. Chase Reeves, welcome to the show. How's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for having me on here, Alex.
Oh, for sure. It was quite the surprise and pleasant surprise to see you reach out on Twitter after our episode with Justin Jackson. It's kind of a weird coincidence because part of what you do and what Justin does, and I think one other person, Tim Smith, who I haven't had on yet, but possibly in the future, we're all kind of the guys that pushed me to make this podcast in the first place. So I know.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit about what you do, but your project, the Fizzle, I was on that for, about a month, and then I started the I Brew My Own Coffee site. So that's pretty funny.
That's wild. That's awesome. I didn't know that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I saw a link. Someone, maybe it was Justin, was tweeting something about it, and I was like, oh my God, what a great idea for a podcast. The reason why is because it's like I've spent the last 15 years of my life just being a total hacker about coffee.
That's awesome.
You know? Like just trying to figure it out and caring way too much about it. And so, and like to the point where like my wife's just like, what is happening to our cabinets? Like, why are they full? What is that one? It has two parts and there's big bulby things. And there's, why are there, can we pick just one of these? And like most of the people in my life don't understand it, but I just couldn't help it.
That's awesome.
So when I saw you're doing a show on it, I was like, oh, I gotta just, and this is a place I can talk about it.
For sure. To start off, though, tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do for a living?
So I am a sort of a web designer by trade and copywriter and sort of like an okay marketer, I guess, which is like a really bad thing to be. But it gets me to and fro. And I've started a site called Fizzle with my friend Corbett Barr and Caleb Wojcik and now Barrett Brooks. And what we do is we help people start their own businesses. We help people kind of focusing on like the solo founder people, people who, kind of like yourself, it sounds like, mm-hmm. right? Like and like myself, it was like, hey, I was doing a blog called Father Apprentice for new dads who just sucked at it, and I had a kid way too early, and I was terrible at it. And so it was like people like that. It was like, how do you build an audience online? How do you actually earn a living from this sort of thing? How do you get more traffic and more email subscribers? And is there a way? To me, the real big passion for me is like, is there a way to do business that doesn't suck?
For sure, yeah.
Is that possible? Can we do this in a way that makes us more human instead of less human? Like, is that doable? And because I just have to believe that there is a way. I don't know. And I guess I was just really enthusiastic about that most of my life, but not in like a businessy way, but in like a, you know, these are the bands that I listen to kind of way. And this is like, I'm a rocker, not a rapper, or I'm a blader. I was a rollerblader, full disclosure. But it's like all of the phases that I was in, they really like defined, that was really me during that time. And I was like both in some ways trying to get people in and in some ways trying to like really understand more of what this meant and all this other stuff. So there's no difference with that now. It's just, it's a phase that hasn't stopped for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely see, like, I love your guys' podcast and everything that you guys are doing over at Fizzle. It seems like one of the most sincere type of marketing and startup type things that are out there right now. And
oh man, it feels good to hear you say that.
I just see, like, you guys are really trying to help just like people start their own businesses, and I, from our standpoint, you know, we're just trying to help people brew a better coffee. So I see some similarities in there that I often pick up during your podcast. So that's always pretty cool.
I love that, like, you know, the way that you put it, help people brew better coffee. I mean, for most of the world, for everybody, most everybody else in my life, like even here in Portland, For most of us, it's just like, what do you mean? Like coffee, what do you mean? Coffee's fine. Just put some milk and sugar in it and you'll be fine. What do you mean better coffee? You know, and somehow somebody just like, somebody screwed me up, man. And now that's just not good enough. And I'll never forgive that person. And I'll never get over it, because now I'm stuck in this world where like, I have to create an experience with this beverage every day, and I feel a little bit of a slave to it. But also at the same time, I love it, but I waste so much money on it, and it's all bad. It's everything's so bad, and it's all good at the same time.
I think there's a lot worse things that you could be spending your money on. So I don't think you're too off.
Oh, I still spend money on worse things. Yeah, I mean, the hookers and blow is still the biggest part of my Excel spreadsheet.
All right, I can't help you there then. So, but to start off, I kind of like to ask every guest, like, what is your first memory, if you can recall, of coffee? I think it's one of those interesting things that I've been thinking about since the past couple episodes, that it is one of those memories that I think a lot of people can recall, actually, which is kind of weird because it's just coffee, and most of those experiences aren't very good the first time. So if you can chat a little bit about that, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I think for my first experience with coffee was I went to a little college in Santa Barbara, a private Christian school there that was up on this hill, and then down at the bottom of the hill there was this little village called Montecito, and there was a Starbucks there. And it just happened to be that's where, you know, like some study groups would end up happening. And I think I had like one there, and I just was tired. I was terrified and tired, and like it was college, and I was all alone. It was my freshman year, and like I needed to try to like study and stay up. And so I went for a coffee, and tried to stay awake there. And I don't remember the flavor, which is probably how I to this day would describe Starbucks coffee. but like it just was, I don't know. It just was like there for me to like get what I needed out of it. Uh-huh. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think it did the job. And I think my dad told me a similar story about like that. Like, you know, that's when he got into coffee too, was to just stay up for studying. I can't remember much of that. I have a pretty shitty memory. I have a pretty bad memory. I don't really remember what it was like or if there was any time before that really, but what ended up happening is that Starbucks ended up being like a little sanctuary for me over time. Like I was this young evangelical, like writing in my journals and listening to Sigur Rós and the Gladiator soundtrack and drinking coffee because it made me feel so good. Like I felt so great. Like I was like, oh my God, everything's finally clicking. I felt like the new spiritual leader that the world needed, you know? So, and that's what got me so hooked on hookers and blow later on, is because I needed to feel like that again. But those were the early days of coffee, when it was just sitting there with my headphones, a journal, a coffee, and Jesus, just going like, you and me, buddy, all the way. Okay. what do you want to do now? You know?
Oh, man. I love it. I love your energy. I was hoping that would come out. I know. In this episode, because
most of the times it's more of a liability than an asset, but on radio sometimes it works out.
I know, sometimes I'm listening to your show at work and I just can't help but laugh there, and the guys I know are just sitting at the other side of the room like, what the heck is going on over there?
Totally.
But obviously since that experience, your level of interest in coffee has grown, and you've come to really dive into it. Can you kind of explain how you got to this point?
Yeah, so I grew up in the Bay Area in East Bay, and I had a close friend that started working at a Pete's Coffee there. I would go in to just kind of like support him. Like I was going to go sit in a coffee shop anyways. I'd drive a little bit further to go to the Pete's. And so I would go there, and I remember every time I left Pete's, like it's still one of the most like when you leave a Pete's Coffee, if you spend any time in a Pete's Coffee and then you leave, like you're going to smell like coffee so badly, like worse than, like I'd be right next to a roaster at Hart or Cova here in Portland. I'm sitting right there as the beans are flying everywhere and there's things happening, and I leave and I smell just a little bit like coffee, but I spend 15 minutes in a Pete's Coffee and I am just drenched with it. Like it's intoxicating. And so there's something of the way, you know, the way that smell sort of works on your brain. I spent a lot of time there. And they also had, you know, Major Dickinson's blend that was this like nice. It was when I started to get some of the flavors, from the coffee. Like I remember like I'd go in and something darker would be on and I'd be like, oh, bummer. Mm-hmm. Cause the Major Dickinson was very, it was like it's like the first cigar I had that I smoked a lot of cigars, and then the first one I ever tasted was the one that was light enough for me to get some of the flavors out of. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a Romeo y Julieta. And the same thing with that Major Dickinson. That was when it kind of started, right? And then I think I remember like being at a Pete's and they had like a French press of a peaberry coffee, you mm-hmm. know? And now I go like, you know, what a terrible way to serve that delicate coffee, you know, in a French press. I would just dream of pulling out the flavors a different way. Mm-hmm. But like I remember it going like, oh yeah, dude, there's like a total like a fruity like blueberry brightness in there somewhere, you know, even through the French press. And so it just kind of started happening in that way. So with a friend who worked at Pete's, with kind of spending a lot of time in coffee shops, they also had this great vegan scone, and I was like vegan straight edge at the time, and it was really cool. And so I would love that scone. And then slowly over time, like some of these flavors started to, you know, and he was talking a lot about coffee. I don't think he knew, just like I didn't know, like we couldn't taste the flavors. We didn't know what was happening. But that's sort of where it started for me. And then since then, moved to, you know, I was in Santa Barbara, did college. When I moved up to, actually lived in Ireland for a while. And there, you spend a lot of time in cafes in Ireland, but it's all like illy espresso. It's all like bad. It's all really, really bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then I fell in love with instant coffee there. Like because the coffee everywhere that I found was really bad. I'm sure it's all fine now. This was like 15 years ago. But the instant coffee has this really, I lived in Dublin, Ireland, and then lived in Canada in like these little podunk towns in Canada. I just like, I was so poor in Ireland that it was either like, there was a lot of tea, just cause it was so cheap, but then this like instant coffee that I could just mix up because I couldn't afford coffee like at a lot of the cafes there. And I just got addicted to it. It has this really subtle flavor and you can make it really strong or not. And it's, I don't know, there's just something really charming to me. Probably because it's like the way that, I don't know, someone in the military goes like, it was really charming when they hazed me. you know, like that's the way I feel about it. But now when I get to go up to my wife's family in Canada, I love drinking the instant coffee. It's like my favorite thing.
Really?
Because same thing with Tim Hortons. Because it just, I don't know if it just reminds me of those days or if it's actually good. I mean, there's actually some rumors that there's like nicotine in Tim Hortons coffee, so it literally is so good. But there is this love affair that I have with like sort of the working man's coffee too. You know, that stuff. Like my wife's dad works at a pulp mill, wears the hard hat, you know, 12 hours a day, does all the things, and it's like 29 cups of instant coffee. You know, yeah, just yep. like big spoonfuls all day long, making it count. And I still have a bottle of instant coffee here waiting for him when he comes and visits. You know? Cause he's like, you give him like something really fantastic and every once in a while you can kind of get through, but most of the time it's like, oh yeah, it's pretty good, but, it's super expensive. Hey, I mean, that was like a $3 cup of coffee. That doesn't, I mean, oh wow, that's too pro. That is right there. But that's where a lot of my love comes from. It's like seeing him drink the coffee and then being in Ireland. But like fast forwarding. From my first friend who was a barista and eventually a manager at Pete's, I've had a lot of friends that were baristas. So I think a lot of my entrance into this was like, you know, being really pretty lonely, and working for myself or doing a lot of like internet work or something like that in cafes and like you kind of like get to know the baristas. So that relationship started to be pretty important to me, even with different people, right? And then some of my close friends from like growing up or even just from the last, you know, 10 years started becoming like these big time barista type people in, you know, people at Cova and Hart and, a guy called Sam Purvis and a lot of other folks who were being talked about on the coffee blogs and things.
Mm-hmm.
And so coffee became this whole other world for me. It wasn't just the drink. right? Mm-hmm. It was the industry. And I understand as a business guy and as a business guy who like wonders like, how can we make business more human? Like, I love this idea of the cafe, mm-hmm. you know, and I love the history of the cafe. I love like the history of coffee. I love these, you know, shepherds and things like that in these crazy far off countries going like, our sheep are really awake right now. What have they been eating? And this idea of this upper and obviously I think part of it is like, I have this, like, I'm addicted to the energy levels, right? Yeah. I'm addicted to when I have enough energy to think about something because I like the brightness of my own thoughts, for better or for worse. I like the sparkliness of them. And when I'm caffeinated, I feel a little more safe, right? Uh-huh. So they should probably diagnose me with ADD and put me on some sedatives. But instead, like, I run towards this coffee because it seems to focus me a bunch. Uh-huh. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So that's sort of the story up to now, like loosely about like, you know, what coffee has, how I've sort of interacted with it in those sort of ways. And then, the main way though has been just like my daily practice of coffee. I think of it like meditating. You know what I mean?
It's
like,
oh, yeah, for sure.
Practice my coffee, you know?
Yeah. I've never caught on to the actual like form of meditation, but I feel like my like brewing coffee in the morning or anytime during the day is as close as I can get to that.
Yeah.
And just taking the time and slowing down in the morning and hand grinding the coffee and just doing a pour over method, you know, I think it really slows me down and just makes you appreciate the cup and plus just gets you ready for the day. And then obviously that caffeine fix for you.
Absolutely. And I just love those moments where you actually get, I could put a world-class cup of coffee in front of me and at one point in the day and I'd just drink it and kind of like keep working on my thing and I would never even notice what's going in my mouth. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Same thing with like with any food, with any conversation, with conversations with my bride, with time with my son, with all this stuff, right? And I could either appreciate those or not, based on how I approach them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so something about that has really become an addiction to me for coffee, like the addiction to the specialness of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like this moment. And that's so I'll tell you in a little bit about like all the other ways that I've brewed coffee, but really now all I do is espresso.
Really?
And I just go to there's a Kova right up the street from me, which is one of my favorite coffee makers in the world, or roasters rather, and cafes. And I go in there and they've dialed it in. They know their stuff. They have a philosophy for how they want the shot to be, which is different from another coffee shop or this, that, or the other. And I know I'm going to get an interesting almost every time I get an interesting shot, right? Mm-hmm. Which is what I'm really looking for. And the reason why I do that is because I need to get out of the house because I'm alone all the time and it gives me an excuse to put some pants on. But also because there's just less caffeine in espresso.
Yeah.
And so I do a shot in the morning and a shot in the afternoon. And that's just seems to be a nice balance between I've had seasons where like whole years where I've gone off coffee and tried to just do tea, but I just miss the smell.
Oh, yeah. I did that for roughly 8 months or so. And I drank just cold turkey, quit drinking coffee and went full time on tea. And it was good. But I just like what you said, you know, you miss that smell and that experience. And for me, it was funny because my wife, or at the time, she was my girlfriend. She was working in a coffee shop. So,
yeah.
And she was doing a barista competition. So most of the nights we would go to the coffee shop once they'd closed down and she'd be working on her routine and all that type of stuff. So I'd be the one to go through all the tastes of everything.
Totally.
So then right after that, I went straight to tea. And just like you said, like I just missed it and I'm glad I'm back to it now.
It's so weird. Like even to this day, like, you know, if I have problems sleeping or something like that or whatever, I have this hippy dippy doctor that I go see and I'm just sort of unwilling to make it an option to stop drinking coffee. It's just, and I don't know why. It's irrational, frankly. It's irrational. I don't know why. Like, it's like a fear thing. Like, I need to fix this. I need to go do mushrooms or something and get cured of my addiction because it's just, I don't know why, but it just feels like such a, like a soulful heart, like protective thing for me. It mm-hmm. feels very safe, I think probably. And I just love it. It's such a wonderful thing. So yeah, it's really hard. Now I'm trying to kind of mix it with tea. Like today, I wasn't feeling all that great the last couple of days. So I've been on tea the whole time. So I've got these great green teas that every once in a while I'll put like coconut oil into because that's uh-huh. kind of nice.
Yeah.
But Can I talk to you about how I've like sort of brewed coffee and like the things that I've learned?
For sure. I was just going about to ask, like, what kind of brewing methods are you into? And I know you said you are more into espresso lately, but when you're at home or something or in the office, what are you brewing with?
So it all started for me with the AeroPress, and that happened like 7 years ago or something like that. Because they're you know, the Aerobi factory, the where they make these things, it's in Fremont, California, or somewhere like that. It might be in San Mateo, but it wasn't far from where I lived. At the
time. Really?
Yeah. So I was able to go and buy a whole box of these things because I had a friend. I have another thing I should mention is I have a really close friend in Canada named Jay who just he was way into this stuff and he was very culinary and always has been. And he was talking about the Clever coffee maker the Clover, like right when it came out and before Starbucks had bought the whole thing and all that stuff. And so he's like, you know what? The closest thing to this is this thing called the AeroPress. So he had told me about that. I don't know how many years ago, but I got one because they were cheap and they were around in the Bay Area. And I started making coffee with it. And I thought it was fantastic. It was just interesting because you had so much control over everything, you know. And I did not know, I did not understand brewing then the way that I do now. But it was a fun way to learn with it. You know, the AeroPress is just this great little hand pump. You get to try a bunch of different crap. Mm-hmm. And this was before I had a scale. The single most important thing I ever did in my entire life was get a kitchen scale that I could use for coffee.
Yeah.
That changed the whole game for me. But for a long time, it was just figuring that out. So it started with the AeroPress, and so much so that I bought a huge box of them, and I thought I'd sell them to my friends because I really loved it, and maybe I could turn a little profit on this thing. Ended up giving all of them away because I couldn't find a friend that I was willing to charge. It was so stupid. Like, it was like $250 worth of AeroPresses just given away. It was fine though. Now everybody that I know has an AeroPress.
Yeah, they're very thankful for you now.
Yeah. And at the time I was new to making websites, so I made the site at aeropresso.com. It's just still just this really old video that would not be the method that I would use for making AeroPress right now at all. But I'm also too lazy to update it, you know? So it's just kind of like, oh, okay. Which does get a little bit of traction on YouTube, which is kind of nice, but mostly I get just negative comments like, why isn't he inverting it?
I watched it right before your. Because I was listening to a podcast that you were on, and you were talking about this, and it was funny to come across this site.
Yeah. So, and it was a long time. It was before no one had ever written about inverting.
Yeah.
Like nobody even knew about it yet. Maybe those weird guys in Norway were kind of just starting to experiment with it, but they hadn't blogged about it yet. So I used the AeroPress for a really long time. Now it's not my preferred brewing method because I find that it has this characteristic taste. Mm-hmm. The way that a French press has a very characteristic taste. AeroPress is, I don't know, for some reason it just has this richness quality to it that sometimes I like to get away from.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, I fiddled with that for a while before I had a vac pot that was okay, except that it just sucked. I hated it. it was way too hard to keep under control, but I tried it all the time, and it sucked. Then I had the Clever coffee brewer. Remember that thing where it had like the its own little stand?
Oh yeah.
And you'd fill it up, and then you would put it on top of your mug, and it would start to drill or mm-hmm. to drip. So that was a way to control a little more of the time of the thing. And I used that at work when I was working in an office a lot because it was like pretty clean, really easy to clean up, just like the AeroPress was.
Mm-hmm.
Two preferred methods. I mean, by far my favorite method is using the Chemex or any kind of pour over thing. It's so much brighter and cleaner. And
yeah.
Everything that I'm looking for in coffee is a bright, juicy, fruity experience, right? So I'm basically exclusively drinking Ethiopian and Kenyan coffees just trying to get that really juicy, I want something wild, man.
Uh-huh.
I so wild that it can be bad. I would still love it. You know, just like bright and tart, whether it's citrus or really stone fruit, like, you know, all that stuff. I just like that characteristic. If you give me something and it's just rich, chocolate, hazelnut, cedary, sort of standard chocolates, things like that, I'm just like, ugh, kill me now. Like, it's fine, but it's just like now I don't get to think about my cup of coffee very much, which uh-huh. is cool though. It's like, it's delicate. It's a little more foundational almost, and that's where I came from. That's Major Dickinson blend. I drink that for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's like, man, give me an experience with a cup. I want I want to go somewhere, right? Which is why I've been doing drinking espresso. Normally what I would do is I do a cup of coffee in the morning and a shot of espresso in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing, I did that for like, I don't know, 8 years. Cause where I was working, there was an espresso shop right across the street that was really good here in Portland. And then if I was at home, there was one nearby as well. Portland were pretty spoiled and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But I started falling in love with these different shots and talking to the barista, cause they just love to be talked to, about like, you know, trying to hear, they love to get to talk to someone who's like pretending that this person is a smart person. So I would pretend that the barista is a smart person and I'd say, what am I tasting here? Help me understand it. And so I would just learn a lot. And I'm still not that great at identifying what's going on in it. And I probably look like an idiot, but I'm very serious about it. Like I want to close my eyes and taste it and go like, ah, that's good or that's bad. You know, and it always starts with like, with the brightness for me, you know, if it's nice and bright or if it's like really like moody and chocolate, like, you know, like down there. I've been a music guy for a really long time. I've made music for forever. So everything kind of ends up on some audio scale for me. So the bright is like the really high end. The sort of like rich and chocolatey stuff is like the low end. And there's things in between. So that's why I still love espresso so much to this day, because every shot I get from great, you know, baristas, pulling great beans, and it's all like single, or everybody, I'm so sad for these guys because they have to dial in some single origin coffee, which must be just such a nightmare, which is why I'm pretty much committed to never having my own espresso machine.
I was just about to ask you, would you ever be interested in getting an espresso machine yourself?
No,
or is it really about that experience of going to the coffee shop and, you know, being able to chat with like the barista and helping you along with that journey almost?
Yeah, I think it's more of the latter because I just don't want to dial things in. Like, I just don't want to, like, I got to get a little bit of a training here at a shop called Kova just after hours. And I just don't understand a lot of extraction stuff with espresso. Everything's different. I'm like intuitive about pour over. Like, it makes so much sense to me.
Yeah.
And I taste it and know exactly like, okay, we just need to open it up a little bit, or we need to, you know, have a little more water or something like that. Cause I was on this journey, of figuring out how to dial in, Ethiopian beans, which are very different from a lot of other beans, because my buddy who's like a barista champion type, he's like, okay, here's the method I want you to use. And it was like, okay, he was on a Chemex. He was using, I think, 25 to 400, I think 25 grams to 400 grams of water. You're hoping for your grind. You just set your grind so that all takes 3 minutes, you know, with the 30 second bloom. And that was interesting, but I could tell that there was just something that needed to be opened up in the coffee once I started going to more of the Ethiopians.
Mm-hmm.
And so the things sort of changed for me and I started figuring out how to do it. And that was such a fun journey, you know, to like dial in the brewing of the coffee. But every time that I've spent behind an espresso machine, it feels really confusing and non-intuitive. And I don't really want it to be intuitive. I do love the magic of like, these people have done this work to create this cup so I can come in and do the thing. And here's my $4 and I'm out the door. You know, and they are my friends. There are a lot of, they're like, I care about these people. I won't care about them forever because they'll go on to their lives. They're all young people doing important, doing things that they one day potentially be a bartender somewhere. And I wouldn't want to keep them from their dreams, but it is fun to have those conversations with them. And when I do want to have like a little less caffeine at home, I do Turkish coffee.
I was going to say, yeah,
which I really like. Yeah.
You mentioned that and very interested in this because I never made it myself at home, and I've only had it a few times at this like little breakfast shop that me and my wife go to every now and then. But when we do go there, like, it's like the first thing we get, and we're more excited about that than the actual like breakfast we're about to eat, which is also amazing. But it's what is it about Turkish coffee, and kind of talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So I've done so much research on this, and nothing out there really teaches it very well. Because it's another one of those like blue collar kind of coffees, that is just so indigenous to this culture that it's sort of, I don't know, it kind of doesn't make sense outside of it. And it doesn't translate very well. And there's a lot of baristas that'll have like their things about like, here's how you do Turkish coffee. But then you watch like an actual Turkish person make the coffee, like some old grandma or some mom or something like that who works at that restaurant you're talking about. And you just be like, well, they're doing something completely different. And this is so good in comparison to, I'm sure, what that, you know, scientist just brewed up over there. And so basically, so the way that I do it, the closest thing that I found that I kind of like is I got my grinder and I grind it as fine as possible, mm-hmm. right? And I do 10 grams of coffee to 100 grams of water. That's it. So that's like a one single serving thing. And then you get an ibrik, what they call it, ibrik, or there's a bunch of names for these things, like most foreign languages. That's just like they can call it whatever they want. But I got some cheap one on Amazon, and it's okay. It's decent. And what you do is you just put that all in there and you mix it up. You just keep your water isn't hot at this point. Then you put it on your stovetop for on like medium to low medium heat, I guess,
mm-hmm.
until it just kind of bubbles. And the bubbles come from the outside, on the top from the outside, and they sort of speed up as they come towards the middle, and you want to pull it off before it comes towards the middle, because if it really starts getting into a roiling boil, you lose this crema on the top, this creamy, bubbly stuff on the top. Mm-hmm. Pull it off, let it sit for 30 seconds, and put it back on again. And then I do it two times. Some people talk about doing it three times. I don't like it when it gets too hot or if there's too much time that the beans sit in there. Though when you pour it, you get a lot of beans in the bottom of the cup anyway.
Oh, yeah, so yeah, for sure.
Doesn't really matter. But so anyways, I do that two times. And then once I'm done with that, I just kind of pour it in the cup. You can kind of, there's other people that say you spoon the foam off as you go sort of into your cup, but I don't see that. I don't like that. I've tried that a few times. It doesn't work very well. And so what happens though is it makes a very, very sweet cup of coffee.
That was one thing I wasn't sure of. Is there like, I mean, like you're saying, it becomes sweet, but was it so sweet that they put like sugar in with it?
It's traditionally you put like a bunch of sugar in. Traditionally you put like a spoon of sugar in or two, right? So you're just like sort of freebasing sugar, in that way, cause it's such a small cup too. That's traditional. I don't do that. And it's still very sweet in comparison to anything else that I could make that with. And it's also, it's very efficient. I mean, I'm only using 10 grams of coffee here
for
my little cup, and I get to serve it in one of my little, like, you know, bee house, little tiny teacups, which I really love.
Yeah, for sure.
And now I've gotten to like sort of adding, you know, there's this thing called bulletproof coffee where you add, grass-fed butter and coconut oil to your coffee, and it's all of a sudden you're a Superman. But I add a little bit of coconut oil to mine just because, I don't know, it just kind of gives it a nice sort of texture, and you definitely, it kind of sustains the energy levels of it a little bit,
yeah,
for lack of a better term. But also because the flavor is just so strong in this thing, you can add a lot to it if you want to. Some people put cardamom in it as they're brewing it. And other flavorants and spices like that. But I like that a lot for a home, thing because, you know what I really like? I like brewing methods that like you can make for just you and another person, that there's like sort of a thing going on.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like a story being told, and a little bit more so than the pour over, because I've done that a bunch. And something about it just doesn't feel the same as like, there's something really fascinating about both a vac pot and the Turkish coffee that people are like, whoa, what's going on here? Tell me about
it.
You know, which is probably why we're all into coffee, is just to look cool in front of our friends, maybe. Maybe. Yeah. But, that's like all of my stuff that I use, that I could use right now. There was a time where there was like Vietnamese coffee methods going on, which I never really got good at. There was more gadgets and things, but, and I actually had like the Bonavita coffee maker that you could put the Chemex right underneath and do the, and like, oh, look at this. Now it's like more automated. And it really sucked, man. It really just, I had these delicate, great Ethiopian beans, and it just felt like it steamrolled it.
Oh, really?
You know, so I took it back, and now I just have the Bonavita kettle with the gooseneck and the variable temperature thing. And that with a little scale that I have were the two most important things I've bought in my kitchen ever because I use them all the time.
For sure. Yeah, it's, we actually got one of the, I don't know if you've seen the Chemex automatic.
No, what's it, no, I haven't.
It's, I think it came out after the Bonavita one, but this one is actually made by Chemex and, is used to be used with their, I want to say their 8-cup Chemex.
Yeah.
And it automates the whole process for you. And it kind of has like the little heating pad for it to sit on after it's done too.
Oh, nice. But, I didn't know that. So they used to have one. They used to have a, my friend Mark at Clive Coffee, he's making a coffee maker called the Ratio.
Yeah, the Ratio.
Yeah, which is so beautiful. And yeah. I got to be like a part of helping him in little tiny nooks and crannies of mostly just the marketing stuff there. But he has this old package from, I think, probably the 60s or 70s of some Chemex something or other. And it's an automatic sort of Chemex brewer that just, it looks beautiful. It looks so cool. It's
I did see that post from him. I think you posted it on Twitter or something showing
did
that
he?
Packaging. And when the Chemex came out with theirs, he said he wished it would have looked like this one.
Oh, that's wild. Yeah, I'll have to look up the Chemex automatic. I'm curious about that. Yeah, there's a couple of these that I've seen come out recently. There's another one, I can't remember what it is, but they're just like the when you get to see them, the other one that I've seen, it looked really cool on like the, I think it was a Kickstarter and stuff, but then when you see it, it's like, oh dude, this is so cheap. It's so cheap and plasticky.
Yeah, with the Chemex, it feels solid. It's nice.
It does.
But there's no way to like control anything on it. I mean, there's a switch.
So it's just
to turn
a shower head. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know if it's like when it happens, like this spurts of water that come out. I don't know if there's any control over it or it's just getting pushed through and however it comes through, you know?
Yeah, like every coffee maker that's ever been. It just
yeah,
kind of like
exactly.
A little,
little, little, little. Yeah. And then there's also everybody, you know, they don't want to have it on the heating pad and stuff. Well, yeah. I mean, usually when we there's three of us in the office, so we'll drink it all by the time that it's done. So
yeah, totally.
It does make it a little easier.
Look at that cute little glass mug that they have. Oh, see, I just love the Chemex from the. I mean, it's like in the Museum of Modern Art as
oh,
a piece
it?
Of art. Yeah, I love it from its design history. It's so beautiful and so functional. And I will always use. I always see these people using like these pour over things on their mugs, and I guess it's kind of cool. But man, no way! Just get a Chemex. It's beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Have you?
I love it.
One of our previous episodes, we talked to a guy out of Canada who makes some kettles out of copper. His company is Monarch Methods, but they're also something where like I correlated it to the Chemex. Like I just love the look of it, and it's so beautiful. Like and then. He has the benefits of using copper and holds the temperature longer and all this type of stuff. But
yeah, totally.
You might want to check that out. It's pretty cool.
I will. Monarch, you said?
Yep, Monarch Methods.
I like that.
But yeah, for sure.
So I think you've extracted all of the coffee, the bits out of me. I mean, I could teach you how to make friends with baristas. I've been well trained in that. I'm probably one of the world's leading experts in doing that. Not to say that I'm always successful by any means, but just that I've got more time under my belt trying to be friends with baristas who clearly don't want to have anything to do with me. And now it's a bit of a game, you know, to see this person in their shirt and just go like, all right, you're mine. The next 6 months, you're going to be gone. You're going to fall in love with me. It's going to be quick and it will be painless.
Well, for sure, Chase. It has been a pleasure to have you on the show and chat with you over some coffee. For the listeners out there, where can they find you online where follow along with you?
So we have a great blog and specific, if you listen to this podcast, you might like our podcast, The Fizzle Show. You can find both of those at fizzle.co. And then if you don't care very much about who you follow on Twitter, I am Chase_Reeves.
Awesome. Thanks again, Chase, for joining us and take care.
Oh, thanks, Alex.